Hello, you're listening to Think Sustainability. This episode is hosted by Cameron Furlong.
Put yourself in this scenario. You're in a regional town. It's been raining non-stop for weeks, and you and your family have taken refuge in the town hall. Suddenly, the power goes off, leaving you and dozens of other families sheltering here without power. This is the unfortunate reality for tens of thousands of Australians affected by fire and flood every year. With Australia's low population density and with towns scattered across regional areas, electricity has to travel great distances to reach these communities, and which makes them especially susceptible to natural disasters, meaning these communities are left without power and access to basic amenities during times they need it most. However, there is research being conducted into the viability of microgrids, small local electricity grids powered by renewable sources that can provide backup power during times of crisis. And the results have been promising. Dr. Sarah Nicholas, Senior Research Consultant at UTS's Institute for Sustainable Futures, is one of the minds behind the research into microgrids. I had a chat with Sarah about the implementation of microgrids and what they could mean for rural and regional communities. Just to get us started off, very basic introductory course into microgrids. So what is it? What are they?
I think the best way to describe a microgrid is to say what it isn't. So if you compare it to the conventional grid, which is, you know, a very centralized system, the microgrid is a distributed system. So if you think about the conventional infrastructure, you have the power source, which is a power station, and then that energy gets transmitted via transmission lines at high voltage, and then at a substation it gets transformed into lower voltage and distributed via the distribution lines to households. And so the microgrid is another sort of system that moves the electricity over like a shorter distance. So you could have a microgrid on top of a large building and then use that electricity for the services that you need.
And so microgrids would normally be powered by a renewable source?
That's sort of the idea, because renewable energy is a lot more flexible. You can have solar panels on your roof, or you can have like a small wind farm or a few wind turbines nearby, whereas if you would go with conventional sources, you wouldn't want them near, you know, a settlement or a community.
So are there any examples at the moment of microgrids that have been sort of implemented and are operational in Australia, or are they sort of a little bit more theoretical, I guess?
There are a number of large projects. There's one project that ISF is involved in as well, which is the Hayfield microgrid, which is in Victoria. And that's sort of a very community-focused microgrid that powers up to 700 homes. So that's sort of in the demonstration phase at the moment.
So will they be more useful to be used in smaller communities, say smaller rural communities, rather than metro areas?
I think the focus is on regional and remote communities, because they're often at the end of the distribution line. So if the distribution line gets disturbed by, let's say, heavy winds or bushfire, that community will be cut off from the grid. And so the microgrid sort of provides a more reliable, and if powered by renewables, clean source of electricity for like a smaller number of people. And so the whole energy infrastructure, which is extremely expensive, if you extend it out several hundred kilometers, and needs to be maintained by the network providers. And so what the microgrid also helps with is to make this whole infrastructure a lot cheaper.
And I suppose a microgrid installed in a rural community would also be more insulated from, as you said, damage or disruption from natural disasters. So there is a sort of an idea, I guess, to implement these microgrids as fail-safes in times of crisis?
Yeah, so if you would have, for example, a bushfire that's coming through the region, and you would have a microgrid installed on top of an evacuation center, that would be really useful to sort of provide the community and everyone who's sort of moving away from the fire with essential services, which is, you know, water purification, heating, cooling, refrigeration, or any sort of life-saving equipment.
Do you think these microgrids could be successfully implemented in metro areas? So maybe serving specific suburbs around, say, Sydney, as a way to introduce renewables into a metro area electricity grid?
Yeah, so there's one sort of approach to use microgrids for sort of heavily commercialized areas where you have a lot of energy demand in a sort of small area. And so those microgrids could help businesses or other commercial activities to take the pressure off the main grid and to introduce more renewables as well.
Historically, with power grids, my knowledge of power history is limited. I just thinking the, you know, back when first electricity was being sort of set up, the Electricity Commission, there was a lot of individual power stations around Sydney that I guess are analogous to microgrids. I could be wrong, so stop me if I'm going on the wrong path. What's stopping there being over complication of power grids across the state of New South Wales, for example, or Australia, with all these separate microgrids among rural communities?
I think it's the opposite. I think it will simplify the electricity grid, because at the moment it's sort of overcomplicated, because we've built these, you know, long distribution lines to small communities, which, you know, consist of several hundred people, and similar to you know, industrial centers. So if those regional communities and regional industries would have their own microgrid, that would simplify the system by a lot.
Rather than complicate it further, yeah, I understand. What are some of the roadblocks that you either have experienced or have seen in implementing microgrids in either rural or industrial areas?
There's a number of things that needs consideration, and I think the main thing is to involve the community, so to make sure they have a say, and that could start with where is the microgrid located, where is the sort of central meeting point, and the community would be the best source for that information. Then there's also some issues around ownership, because a lot of the microgrids are installed in agreement with the network providers. So the microgrid can operate independently when it's sort of that's called islanded, but it can also be connected to the main grid. So in times of low demand from businesses, the microgrid could sell electricity to the main grid. So it can go both ways. And that's why the network providers are part of the equation.
So that kind of leads into my next question. So there's obvious benefits for microgrids for communities when they're cut off from the main grid in times of, you know, crisis. But during, you know, everyday, day-to-day normal situations, would the microgrids be offline and operational, or would they be providing power back into the main grid, or they'd just be operating as normal?
That depends on the setup. If the microgrid is built in a way that is connected to the grid, it could, you know, support just normal operational things like, you know, keeping the fridge running at the local community center or any sort of electrical equipment. And I think the island mode is really to, you know, keep the microgrid running when it's actually needed, or when it would be cut off from the main grid.
Could they be also used to charge large battery farms to store electricity for later use?
So what often is done as a setup of the microgrid is that you would have some sort of energy storage, like a battery, that, you know, would be sitting within the community center. The other option you have is to have a fast charger or like any sort of electric vehicle charger. So you could use the car or the vehicle as a battery as well. So that's called vehicle to grid. So it can go both ways. So you could store excess electricity in the car battery or charge the car.
So who would pay for these microgrids? Would the providers pay for it? Would the community pay for it? Would there be government grants that people could take advantage of?
Yeah, so at the moment, the funding is mainly from the federal government. So the Commonwealth, via the Australian Renewable Energy Agency, short ARENA, they have released a number of programs, and they have in the past funded microgrids. So from 2014 onwards until now, they have had feasibility studies and pilot programs. And so the latest development or the latest funding from ARENA was last year, where ARENA allocated $50 million to testing and piloting microgrids in regional areas. And this year in October, ARENA provided another source of funding for First Nations communities. So that's $80 million that are sort of going towards First Nation communities and building microgrids there.
So have any of those microgrids for First Nations been developed yet, or are they still in development?
No, that's open for applications. So this was just in October. So that's,
still as
relatively new. Yeah.
Watch this space kind of.
Yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
And what about the pilot ones? Are they still in development as well?
They started last year. So I think there have been some setups.
Do you know how they've been going?
There have been a number of communities that have applied for the funding, and so they're in consultation at the moment.
What's your ideal world with a grid populated by microgrids? What's the ideal situation that you'd like to see?
Yeah, I think the two points that are mentioned in the beginning, that community consultation, and not only consultation, but engagement is really important to increase the acceptability of those systems and to move away from sort of a top-down approach and really include the community to create some ownership in terms of actual ownership, but also like a literal ownership.
So, and just another point, what about farms? So could there be a situation where each farm has their own microgrid, or would they be connected to a community microgrid, or would they still be getting their electricity from the main line?
Yeah, so with large farms, I think they could have their own like microgrid, because there is a lot of roof space that's available. If you look at farms, a lot of sheds, and so they could be self-sufficient in that way. They could also connect with a nearby farm and sort of do a peer-to-peer arrangement where they share electricity depending on when it's needed. There's probably one aspect, and I think that's sort of moving more into the discussion at the moment, which is the idea of climate resilience. And I think the last few years have been speaking for themselves in terms of climate change is here, and it will be difficult to handle. And I think adjusting the electricity infrastructure, but also getting us started with a proper transition towards renewables. I think microgrids are really important in that development, and it should be sort of an asset that's accessible for different and diverse groups, and I think the First Nations program is really important.
This episode is hosted by Cameron Furlong. You can listen to Cameron on our Think Digital Futures podcast, which explores how today's technology is transforming tomorrow. Think Sustainability is made possible with the support of 2SER Radio, the University of Technology Sydney, and is heard around Australia on the Community Radio Network. Think Sustainability is made in Sydney, which sits on Gadigal land of the Eora Nation, whose sovereignty was never ceded. You can subscribe to Think Sustainability wherever you get your podcasts.